Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host is former NFL linebacker, charter school founder, and ordained minister, Marvin Smith.
Each week, we will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future.
And we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and much more.
With each of us having over 30 years working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields, and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family and mine and Mr. Cardoza's mentally, physically, and spiritually sound.
And make this world a better place for all of us. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our guests today are Hunter Motz and Katie O'Brien.
They are the authors of a highly acclaimed book, The Straight A Conspiracy, Your Secret Guide to Ending the Stress of School and Totally Ruling the World. In this life-changing book, they are sharing their surprising and spectacular findings and their tips and secrets that will help children and teens become successful and productive students.
Okay. And, this is Answers for the Family. We are your hosts, Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith. Stay tuned in. You don't want to miss this show.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back. Well, Katie and Hunter, this is Marvin, co-host. Welcome to Answers to the Family. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent. Thanks for having us.
We're excited to have you on, and I'm especially excited, you know, as far as myself being involved in education, as we say, public.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, first of all, I'm glad that you took this time right now. I know it's right before many of the schools are about to go in session. And I just thought your book is just so well set up for this time where, you know, parents are looking at getting their kids into school. You know, teens are now, you know, getting ready to go for their first week of school. So, again, I think the timing is right. And I really appreciate you coming on and writing the book. And one of the things that I noticed in the book, and right from the very beginning, you start your book with the worst idea ever. So for our listeners, can you share what is the worst idea ever and why?
Absolutely. The worst idea ever is the idea that people are born smart. This is something we, Hunter and I, ran a tutoring company together for about 10 years. We worked with hundreds of students from elementary school all the way through graduate school in every possible subject, And we kept noticing over and over again that whenever we would start working with a new student, they would always tell us, oh, I'm just not a math person, or I didn't get an ear for languages, or I'm not a natural writer. And these are things that all of us, you know, all of us as adults, kids, everybody says these things all the time. And we started to look into the research because we were like, can that be a thing that you're just naturally not a math person? And, you know, as it turns out, there are decades of research in neuroscience, in psychology, that shows that we know exactly how the brain learns and that you can learn anything. And it's really the idea that some people are born better at some things than others that gets in everyone's way. And so that was really what inspired us to write the book in the first place, is to just get that idea out of school for good, so that everyone knows you're coming in the same as everyone else. It's just about the work you put in and that you really can do anything you put your mind to.
Well, that's great. Now, this is Marvin. I have a question for you. In sharing what you just said, I mean, a couple things. I always thought I was born smart, but I guess that's not the truth, you just kind of blew my theory of I'm a smart person, and that's why I kept getting bad grades. Jeez. But anyway.
Well, speak for yourself.
Okay, Alan. Okay, jeez. But I have a question. Now, you've worked with students for a long time, you know, Katie, as I was listening to you. But why did you guys decide to write this book? I think it's apropos. I think it's a great time for it. Because there are a lot of kids, and I do a lot of work in public education on the reform side, and especially when I start looking at the underserved communities, the underserved child, it's this whole notion, you know, I look at the neuroscience and the biology behind it, but I'm not that smart. And I talk to these kids all the time. I say, you are smart. It's just a matter of how content's being applied. So anyway, why did you guys write this book?
Well, we didn't set out to write a book. Like, we had no intention. I mean, Katie may have wanted to write a book at some point, but it probably would have been a novel rather than a book about neuroscience. We just realized that, you know, it's the old thing, if not you, then who? If not now, then when? You know, this neuroscience, a lot of it has been out there for 30 years in the academic journals, but it isn't getting to the people who need to know it most, which is the kids.
Yes.
Like, kids need to know that, hey, our ideas about the brain have changed, and it makes a total difference in how you approach school. If you get a C on a math test, that doesn't mean that you didn't get the math gene. It means that you didn't approach it in the right way, you didn't check your work, you didn't study properly, and all of those things can be fixed. And so you're not helpless. You have it in your control to get the education that you want. And I think it's really important that you talked about the underserved communities because, you know, for the last, you know, 40, 50 years, we've been hoping that, you know, the country would get together and provide these people with better services and that we would change our policies. Well, that hasn't happened.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, if you're a kid in school today, you need to know that, you know, Superman isn't going to show up. The likelihood is that the educational system is not going to fix itself in the next 10 to 13 years while you're still in school. And so you need to figure a way to succeed in a broken system.
Well said. Well said. And as you were sharing, Katie and
Hunter.
Alan's looking at me, and he has this big smile on his face because he's looking at me going, my eyes are twitching and going in the back of my head. I go, yes, yes, the information is being brought forth. So that's really good.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you're approaching this from the standpoint of saying, look, we know that it's not a perfect system. We know that there are problems, you know, in the system itself. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that you just give up and you don't learn, or you just, you know, you just assume that you're not going to get what you need. So now I know that there are some parents that I've talked to, and for those that have listened to the show, they know that, you know, I read the books while I'm riding the bike at the gym, and so people come up and go, okay, so who's going to be on your show this week? And there were some that were parents that were saying, oh, this is great. I'm going to have my teenager listen. Okay, they're not in school yet. I'm going to have my teenager listen. So if you were talking to some of the teenagers that are looking at it, they're in high school, but they're going, you know, I'm trying to get myself into the college that I want. What would be some of the things that you would tell them that would help them to succeed in these high school years?
Well, I think the number one thing, this is the simplest thing, and it's something that every single student should do, is to look at your mistakes. Looking at your mistakes, figuring out what went wrong, and using them to improve is the cornerstone of how you learn anything. That's how learning works, and that's what all of the research says. But if you look at students who are doing well in a subject, they look at their mistakes. But a lot of students, instead of looking at their mistakes, they feel stupid. And that's the crucial word right there, is feel, because stupid is a feeling, and it's the feeling of shame. And shame causes us to avoid the source of our shame, which in school is our mistakes. If you've ever wondered why students get a bad test back and wad it up and stick it in the bottom of their backpack, never to be seen again, it's because they feel stupid. And there is no reason to feel stupid, and not only that, feeling stupid is the reason why you're getting bad grades. So get out all of those bad tests. Analyze them, figure out, okay, I got number three wrong. Why did I get number three wrong? And go talk to your teacher, or go talk to, you know, one of your classmates who understands the material better than you do, until you understand, okay, I didn't understand how to do this kind of math problem, or I don't know how to use this kind of comma, or whatever it may be. And as you fix each of those things one by one, that simple behavior applied to any subject will turn around your grades, and you'll start to realize, hey, the issue was never me. It wasn't my ability to do well. It was that I just didn't understand the material, and I can come to understand anything.
And that's really, I mean, so much of what we focused on once we started going through the research was this idea of emotions and how greatly emotions affect how we all do in school and in our careers beyond school, frankly, because when we hear all these ideas, you know, we hear these genius myths about, you know, Thomas Edison invents the light bulb out of thin air, and Mozart can compose sonatas from the age of five, and, you know, we have a lot of mythologizing in our culture of these great geniuses who have sudden brilliance out of nowhere, and then we take that into school, and we see the kid sitting at the desk next to us who has his hand raised immediately for every question, when you're sort of sitting there and still going, wait, hold on, what class am I in? What are we being asked? You know, you see that kid next to you, and you've heard about how smart just shows up, and you immediately think, oh, great, well, I guess he's just good at this, and I'm just not. And those things happen early on, and we carry them with us, and really, those emotions dictate our behavior and how we attack anything we're trying to learn. And so much of school, we realized, and that's what we really wanted to share with all of these students, is about taking it out of the realm of being personal. And that's the liberating thing about the science that's out there now. It's like, whatever you know, wherever you are, that doesn't say anything about you. You didn't get a bum brain. You know, you don't have to take that as your ultimate sentence for the rest of your life. It's just where you are right now. Based on the work you've put in, this is where you are. If you put in more practice, you'll be further ahead. And once it becomes unemotional, it becomes so easy for students to look at all their mistakes, improve really quickly, just all of that other, you know, noise goes out the window.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say get rid of the emotions. Look at it from a standpoint of being objective and not being subjective. And that's the, I call it the $1 million question, or the idea was getting these kids to start looking at it from a standpoint of, you know, I look at the brain as kind of there's two brains, the emotional brain, we talk about the hippocampus, and the logical brain. And unfortunately, that, you know, when you become emotionally hijacked, the emotions take over. And this is really trying to get kids, and then people in general, to start to look at how to be more objective about the work, which will now get you out of the emotions into the logic. And I think one of the things that I see a lot going on in schools today, or they're trying to make that go in that direction, Hunter and Kate, is this whole thing about social-emotional learning. You know, and one thing I do like, too, with the science, the neuroscience, we know that the brain can constantly change and grow, you know, at these new neural networks. So there's hope, and I believe what you guys are sharing is, you know, that direct line and a direct alignment that, hey, here's the science and here's how to the objective side of making it work, which is great.
Absolutely. And sort of one of the most exciting things about the science, I think, is that we now know that learning anything works in the same way. So the other best thing that teenagers can do going into this school year is to take the thing that you're really great at, and you may not be giving yourself credit in your life for this being an amazing skill that you've worked so hard to do, but if you're great at video games, think about how you've gotten so good at them. When you approach a new video game, you get a new game, you start the first level, you go through the first level, if you die at the end, you don't say, oh, I didn't get the Call of Duty gene. You don't give up on Xbox forever. You know, you just start at the level again, and you go through, and then you go through again, and you keep tweaking what you're doing until you figure out how to beat that level, and then you move on. And there's nothing about you know, it's a challenge that's fun. You're dissecting it, you're picking it apart, and you're figuring out how to beat that level to get to level two. The same is true if you like art or cooking or any other thing that you're good at in your life that you feel really confident in. That process is exactly what you need to be amazing at math, at history, at writing, at any other skill. It's just that you don't have all the bad emotions that come from having believed for so long that you're bad at math. And so, you know, instead of letting those get in the way, take the thing that you love, take the thing that you think you're awesome at, and just apply that process to the thing that is not going so well.
And I couldn't agree more. And in fact, I believe I mentioned it in another show, and that is, you know, why don't we have a situation in our public school system to where we are focusing on what it is we are great at? You know, as opposed to, you know, if you have a child that's getting, you know, A's in three of their classes and getting C's and D's in the other two, we're telling them to focus on the other two. We're telling them to spend the time focusing on the thing that they're struggling with or the thing that's not coming natural, and it should be just the other way. And one of the people that I like to quote on this is John Maxwell. John Maxwell says that he wasn't very good at math, but he was really good at so many other things. And finally, when he got a little bit older and he looked at it and he said, you know what? He says, I'm going to focus on the things that I'm really good at, and I'll hire somebody to count my money. You know? So if we can just get that, and that's one of the things that I like in your book is that when you talk about the fact of, you know, we're going to try to take the emotion out of it, and we're going to try to focus on the things that you do well. And as you just said, focus on the things, whatever the methods are that you think are getting you to that point, focus on that.
And I'm coming and kind of piggybacking on what Alan is saying is that it makes a lot of sense, you know, because I've worked with a lot of students. And when you're telling them, say, hey, Johnny, focus on your pain. Doesn't it feel good to focus on your pain and do well? Yeah, right, really. So, you know, and I use myself as an example. I was very good in sports, but I had a house where my dad was an educator, and it says, hey, you can't play if you can't maintain a B average. And I always recall, I said, Dad, but all you need is a C for CIF. He says, I don't care what CIF says. In this household, you got to maintain a B. So what I was good at, I was motivated to do well in the classroom because I wanted to play sports. And so that helped me figure this process out. And, you know, and which brought me on to having a chance to get a major scholarship and go on and do some great things in life. But it's coming back to what you guys are sharing. It's a conspiracy.
Well, but I think that's the thing, is that what you're talking about is that the conspiracy is really our emotions.
Yes.
That's really what's working against us. Yes, there are these ideas that float around about geniuses being magical and all that sort of stuff, but ultimately the thing that's really getting in our own way is our emotions. And once you recognize that, hey, we need to not, I mean, very often parents are like, my kid isn't motivated, so I'm going to tiger mom them into wanting to study and do all that sort of stuff. Once you stop trying to just, you know, sort of push past the emotions and, like your dad, really engage with the emotions and say, hey, he really wants to play football. That's what gets him fired up. So we're going to connect the grades to the football and use that as a way to get him to engage with the grades. And really, I mean, all of this stuff is very, very fixable. Once you realize that, yes, school is about putting your eyes on your books. It's about putting your attention on your books. But the thing that comes before that is having the motivation to be able to put your attention on your books. And once you really start engaging with, okay, what's going on emotionally? What are the choices that, you know, my student is making or I as the student am making out of that? Then it all becomes much, much simpler. And you suddenly find that, hey, it's no one's bad here. There aren't any big problems. And it's all very, very fixable.
Now, you mentioned in your book a little bit about automaticity, okay? So we've created a word. Tell us a little bit about what automaticity is and how that fits in this scenario.
Well, we didn't create the word. That's just what neuroscientists call it. But in general, neuroscientists, awesome at neuroscience, not so great at naming things. But automaticity is just making things automatic.
Yes.
Yeah, it's essentially, I mean, the easiest way to understand it is, you know, as you were saying, the brain is totally flexible all through life, and this is the huge exciting news that has come out recently, is that your brain is whatever you make it. And so it's ready to adjust at all times, you know, depending on whatever you're practicing or whatever you're focusing on, that's what your brain is going to, you know, become stronger and stronger at doing. And so automaticity is really just the idea that the more often you practice something, the more often you do something in the same way over and over again, the more that your brain makes that activity automatic for you. So if you think about that in terms of when you learned to read, you were not good at reading when you started. You know, you had to really think about what certain letters sound like. What does an F sound like? And when I see C-A-T, what does that mean? And then you got a little better. You made those things automatic. And so then your automaticity could shift over to start working on words and then sentences. And now, after years and years of practice, you can be at the point where you can read a full page and be thinking about metaphor and the larger message and the imagery and all of the things that, you know, senior year English class requires of you and beyond. You know, but that was not always the case. You know, now you're in a place where you don't have to stop and think about how the letter F sounds while you're also focusing on, you know, the deeper meaning of Animal Farm. And that's sort of what's so awesome about your brain is everything that's new, you work on it, it makes it automatic, and then you can focus on the next level up.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
And I was going to say, too, I we're talking about neuroscience, the words that they use. And I, as you were sharing, too, Katie, about, you know, all the science shows now that the brain is moldable, and the term they use is neuroplasticity, you know, and which is great. I mean, because there's things they're saying that in the old days, that dog can't hunt. Otherwise, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But what we're saying is that, we can. It is possible. And I think, Hunter, as you were sharing, is to get that motor, to put the motivation behind it. I don't care how old you are, the brain, we can still learn. It's still, otherwise, there's still hope for me.
And me.
There's still hope for all of us, and I think that's the thing, is that so often, if we're really, really honest with ourselves, right, because we believe that dog can't hunt, that you can't teach the dog new tricks, you know, we don't really try. Like, we never really try to change these things because we've fundamentally, in some sense, given up, you know?
Right.
And we're not making the sort of concerted effort that it took for us to learn to read, for example, in the first place. I mean, people don't appreciate just how much work goes into that. I mean, you know, there's whole years devoted to, you know, learning your ABCs and then, like, reading very basic books and piece by piece by piece. Like, if you really total up the number of hours that's involved in something like that or learning addition or subtraction or anything like that, it's huge amounts of work. And I think one point that's really important to make here as well is the fact that when we talk about practice and we're talking about sports, we can all see that practice. You know, we see somebody go out on the football field. We see them every night coming home and, like, you know, practicing their free throw or whatever it may be. We see them go into the batting cage, all of that stuff. But when we're talking about mental skills, you don't see that practice.
Right.
You know, no, you don't really see what someone is doing, you know, so that, you know, even if they're sitting there and you can have two kids sitting there with a book and one of them is reading the book and really thinking about the ideas and the other one is thinking about pizza. And, you know, the practice space, the gym for mental skills is invisible. You can't see inside it. And so often we make these really unfair comparisons where we're like, I sat here for an hour with a book, you know, she sat here with an hour for a book, but she understands it and I don't. So clearly she must be smarter. Well, there's a really huge assumption that you're making there, which is that you guys are doing the same things with your attention, with your brain.
Right. That's so true. And I say, case in point, when I think about professional athletes, the same skill sets, the same practice of mastery that made them great in that sport to be the Michael Jordans of the world, we're finding out a lot of the athletes have a problem transitioning into the real world of society. And those same skill sets that made them great, for some reason, you know, we're finding out through the research that they're not connecting those pieces that are that mental mapping that you're talking about. And it makes it difficult.
Absolutely, and that just comes from the fact that for so long we have all fostered this culture of separate skills being separate things.
Right.
And, you know, even in little kids you hear things like, my brother is the athlete, I'm the student, my sister's the artsy one, as though these are things that, you know, you only get one or two of,
right.
And
right.
That it's some scarce resource that, yeah, then nobody else can have it if it's your, you know, and it's crazy, because in reality, your brain is ready and totally down to do all of that stuff and anything that you want to put it on. But it's, you know, once we all start understanding just how much learning one thing is the way that you learn anything, and the same exact work ethic that gets you to the professional level in any sport is exactly the work ethic that's going to get you to the top in another field.
Yes.
And even when you hear terms like student-athlete, like if you say something like student-athlete to most people, they don't really believe that the athlete is going to be much of a student. Like, there is this underlying prejudice that people who are athletes, you know, are, that's what they're mostly good at, and they're never going to be that comfortable with managing their money or any of those sorts of things that, you know, professional athletes often struggle with. And those ideas, you know, filter into athletes' heads. That changes the way that they think about themselves. And so when they're approaching those sort of life skills that you're talking about, they're not really developing it. What ends up happening is that they do the same thing that math nerds do, which is they're like, this is my thing, I'm going to dial down on this, and then avoid everybody else, right? Everything,
yes,
else,
yes.
And then somebody else can manage my money. Well, and then guess what? Your business manager rips you off,
exactly,
because you have no math skills, and so you didn't pay attention to the fact that he's driving a really nice car all of a sudden, and, you know, you're apparently broke.
Yes.
Well, so it sounds like what we need to do is figure out a way to get more than 24 hours in each day so that we can spend as much time on that thing that we're really good and translate that into all of the others. So the question is, for a high school student or a college student that's taking 5 or 6 classes, what's the best way for them to set up their time in such a way that they really can excel in some of these other areas?
Well, that's one of the big mistakes that I think people make, is that, you know, people are like, I'm getting these results and I'm spending all my time doing this. So if I want to get better results, then I'm going to have to spend that amount of time times 3 or whatever it is. And it's really not the case, because if you look at how people are approaching, like, you know, we sit with students, and it's very interesting, because as you have them talk through what's going on in their head as they're approaching this material, they spend a lot of their thoughts are spent on worrying,
yes,
spent on not being sure whether they can do it, you know, sort of avoiding it, wish they were doing something else. I mean, we've all had the experience of, you know, if you've ever had to write a paper for school, how much time is spent actually writing or actively looking up quotes or actively trying to figure it out, and how much time is spent wishing that the paper would write itself? That, you
or just
know,
disappear.
Samantha from Bewitched would show up, wrinkle her nose, and that there would magically be a perfect A paper on your screen. So what we need to do is, it's not that we need 24 hours a day, it's that we need to understand how learning works, so that we don't waste our time, you know, wishing that somebody else would fix the problem for us, so that we could get in there and solve it for ourselves. And crucially, a lot of that really comes down to removing that worst idea ever. Because at the root of a lot of those thoughts, the reason why, rather than just getting out your mistakes on your last math test, figuring out what went wrong, and then learning those rules right away, the reason why you don't do that is because fundamentally you don't believe that you have the potential to get an A.
Right.
Okay, so how do they fix that?
Well, that's the point is...
That's the point is that you know, we just need to get to a place where everyone feels comfortable to dig in right away, right? Right. When you get back a test or a quiz and it has problems on it that are marked wrong, you don't waste a second. Right away, as soon as you get an opportunity, you look at what happened, you figure out where, you know, what step of the problem was off, and then you make sure that that's solid, and that way the mistake doesn't happen again and again. Because so often this turns into a cycle for students where, you know, the first test comes back and it's a C, and that makes you feel stupid, so then you aren't going to put in as much time or effort on the next bunch of homeworks because this is now the class that makes you feel terrible about yourself. And so then the next test goes a little worse, and that confirms your belief that you're bad at math, and it goes on and on forever, and you keep making the same mistakes over and over. I mean, so often when we've been working with students, we've sat down and they've said, I am just terrible at calculus, like, calculus is not happening for me, math is not my thing. Well, math and calculus are huge problems to try to solve and face. But sometimes when you dig in, it turns out that you just never quite learned the power rule, or you didn't learn how to multiply fractions tons of years ago, and so the same little mistake has been happening over and over and over, making you think that you have some big issue with math, when in reality it's just one straightforward rule that you memorized a little bit incorrectly.
And that's the thing, is that we think of these things as these big and solvable problems that are going to take lots of time. But you don't even have to wait until you feel comfortable doing that. It's really simple. Force yourself. This is my new policy for the year. My one new school year resolution is that I am always going to analyze every single mistake on any single test or homework or whatever it is, and figure out why it went wrong and what I need to do to prevent it. And that, by the way, is what the Federal Aviation Administration does. Anytime a plane crashes, they get out all the wreckage, they analyze the crash, they listen to the black box flight recorder, and they figure out why that particular crash happened and what procedures they need to put into place to make sure that that type of crash never happens. And that's why, mile for mile, you are safer flying than you are walking down the street. That is the process that works. That's the process that works in Silicon Valley. That's the process that works in, you know, aviation. And what most of our students do is they prefer the Soviet approach, which is what you do is that you pretend that the plane crash never happened. And guess what? That same kind of plane crash is going to happen again and again. We need to foster a culture, and you don't have to wait for, you know, the school system to implement this. You know, in your home, you can make a very simple policy. This is a house where we analyze mistakes and figure out what we need to do to prevent them from ever happening again.
Yeah, and so really what it ends up being is that it's not about spending more time, it's about actually making the time that you do spend productive. And that's really all it comes down to. There's so much involved in the process of school for so many students out there that has nothing to do with the work in front of you. And so much, you know, that's really what our book is out to do, is to just strip all of that extra anxiety and stress and disappointment and, you know, the work that's not leading anywhere out of the process, so that it can be easy again. Because that's the sort of kicker, is the students that you see doing well, so often you hear, well, like, they don't even have to try, it's no work for them. That's only the case because they've been practicing in a certain way that's been beneficial up until now, and so the process really is easier. It's pretty stress-free, it doesn't take very long. If something starts to go amiss, they fix it, they get back on track, and they finish. And that looks like magical genius that I don't have, but in reality, it's just a process that's emotion-free.
And that everybody can have.
Yes.
Well, I have a question for you. Say big picture. I'm a big picture guy. And wouldn't it be great, you know, when we start talking about the process, that our education system, if they would adopt this process you're saying, how it could really just radically impact so many kids. And I'm looking at the bigger picture. Let's say if we're looking at, from a global standpoint in America, you know, and I'm a very, I guess, but as an ex-athlete, I'm a competitor. It's part of, it's in me. Why are we so bad compared to other countries. And it's time that we kind of, my attitude, let's dominate. Let's, you know, let's up the ante and let our kids, all kids in America, I don't care where they come from, but collectively and look at these global markets and start to dominate. So otherwise, what I'm saying is, wouldn't it be great if our educational system would employ this?
I think it would be great. I mean, I don't know how much faith you have in Congress right now, but most of America doesn't have a whole lot of faith. I mean, you know, it would be great if this became standardized policy, but, you know, from every side of the issue, like, getting anything done in Washington is very difficult. The great thing is that we do not need to wait for Congress to figure it act out, because if it's really simple, this is a cultural shift more than a legislative shift.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you want to change this, do it in your home, you know, and then tell a friend about the experience and have them do it in their home. And, you know, one home at a time, we can make this happen in the United States, and we can have the dream that you are talking come real. Because it doesn't, we don't need to wait for anybody to do this. We can do this today. You can do this school year.
Yes.
You can do this right now. It's a really, really simple attitude shift. And if people are seeing, like, if, you know, suddenly you're, you know, this kid who last year was getting C's or D's is getting all A's and finding it really easy and getting, you know, really participating in class and having a great time and all that sort of stuff, then the kids in school are going to be like, hey, what's up with John? Like, last year, John wasn't doing well, and now he seems to be doing really well. John, what's the deal? And slowly but surely, the message will spread. But it actually, I mean, that's the thing. It can happen, but we don't have to wait for Congress to figure its act out.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the science that has come out is amazing. It's mind-blowing. You're spot on to say that this could be just an enormous revolution in how the entire world progresses, innovates, creates new things.
Yes.
And it's just about students and adults everywhere realizing there are no stops on your potential. That's really what it is. And once you take that out of the process and you know that you can teach yourself anything with the right process and the right series of steps, then there's nothing that you can't do. And it doesn't matter if you're in an underserved school or in the best school with the best resources, because whatever you can get at your disposal, you can work your way through. Whether you got the teacher who's really hard and mean or the teacher who's easy, whatever school you're in, it doesn't matter, because it's all about teaching yourself, holding those standards up for yourself, and getting yourself to the next level every day.
Well, and I love what you guys, you know, putting the systems out of it and really going back to the core, the individual, the family. And I have done that, and I'm doing that, and there's been some phenomenal results. I'm an individual, though, along with my friend, Mr. Cardoza, and I've taken a step to go one step further, and I got involved in public education reform. You know, I've opened a charter school, and I'm looking at others. So just for that reason, I can implement systems in place that I know radically change lives. But
mm-hmm,
like you
mm-hmm.
say, but on the political side, and Alan can attest, it's a war. And, you know, for
absolutely.
Me, it's about
Well,
it's
to
about
get even
kids.
More basic than that, I mean, you know, for plenty of decades, everyone has been trying to fix education from the standpoint of teachers and classroom size and resources and what are the parents doing and all of these other things, when at the end of the day, nobody is in charge of a student's education except the student.
Yes.
Everything else is help along the way. But just like Hunter was saying, you can have the best resources. You can have 800 laptops and iPads and brand new textbooks and the best teachers and super supportive parents, and you can sit through an entire class period and you can think about lunch.
Yes.
And then nothing has happened, and it doesn't matter. We would meet with kids who had already gotten as far as April and never cracked open the gorgeous textbook that they had. And so that's really why we wrote the book specifically to teenagers, because you as a student are the only person who's really in the driver's seat in this process. You're the only one who can ultimately make it happen. And so if we can make that shift happen from the student's perspective and really change their minds and really change the way that they tackle every new challenge, then all of the rest is only going to help that process along, but it can't happen without students. And for a long time, that's been sort of the you know, the reigning idea is, if we can just give students enough, it'll work for them. If we can just help them enough, and no, it's got to be the students who change.
Yes, absolutely. Now, have you been approached, or are you aware of any private schools that are adopting this? I know I've spoken with a lot of private schools, and there are some things similar that are going on. But have you been approached by any, and to where people can point to it and say, "Look, here's an example where it's working on a little bit bigger scale than just in the home"?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We've done lots of school talks at schools, and you know, from. You know, we're a big fan of Harlem Academy, and we've done some talks there, and they're, you know, they've been implementing a lot of our stuff. And then, you know, at the other end, you know, private schools in LA. I mean, there are schools that are doing this stuff. I think that's the thing. I would love to see more of this, especially because this is what all of the science says. And I think especially, I mean, you know, again, the reason why we keep on focusing on mistakes is because that is the core, and if you're not doing that, then anything else that you're talking about is sort of, you know, it's window dressing, right? Like, the core is mistakes, and the problem is that, you know, getting things wrong is emotionally uncomfortable, and so we never face up to that, but getting things wrong is the core of learning, and we really need to lean in on that, and any school that is not doing that has you know, is off track. You know, and frankly, that's pretty much every school that you look at in the country. And, you know, our feeling, I think, in general, I mean, we are also really individual focused. You know, there's that line in Men in Black that I don't fully remember, which is that, you know, it's, you know, individuals are really great. It's people that are problematic. Like, when you talk to people one-on-one, you always find that they're awesome. But, you know, once a bureaucracy starts getting going and all that sort of stuff, then inevitably what happens is there's a whole set of competing interests, and before you know it, we can't see the forest for the trees.
Right. And what ends up happening ends up not being about kids. It's about everybody's own personal agendas for whatever that is. And it's almost like, and my attitude is, what about the kids?
Mm-hmm.
What about the kids? That's why I love what you guys are doing, because it's shifting the focus and saying, it is about the kids. It's about you.
Yeah,
it's about you.
And that's the reality is, you know, legislation is great, but if you are a kid today sitting at your desk, hating life because all of your classes feel terrible and it's frustrating and it's stressful and it's hard, you can't afford to wait for Washington to solve that. You'll be 90 before you're satisfied with whatever you get, you know? And in the meantime, the direction of your life is being determined by all these other things that aren't you,
mm-hmm.
you know, by people who say, oh, don't worry, if you're not good at math, you're so creative. Or, you know, by people who tell you that your brother is the smart one, or that, you know, you can't be a math person and an English person, or any of the other bazillion things that we have all heard a million times that are not true. You know, you need to be able to take charge right now, no matter what age you are, and get the life that you want. And that's possible now, and we have the science to prove it now. So it's just about making sure everyone knows.
Well, and I have another question, then. Understanding that, and then looking at, you know, as I look at your book and as I've kind of went through it, and it's focused for that high school or that later middle school person. But then we understand through all the research that early education is paramount in setting up that foundation for our kids. I call it for the trajectory of success. Then my question is, what do we do in early education to start young? Because kids at that age, they don't understand. I mean, they have no clue. So now, we put all these kids in the hands of a system. And this is where I see the inequity. We put them in a system and hoping, like magic, they're all going to turn out okay. What do you say about that?
Well, I mean, listen, I think it's really important that you bring up early education. But I would also say on the other end of the spectrum, I mean, this also applies to people who are in their 40s in the middle of their careers, and it applies to retirees. Like, it's an entire cultural shift that needs to happen at every end of the spectrum.
I believe that.
And again, you know, if you're a parent, you know, and you've got a kid who's 6, it's great to hope that, you know, the system is going to get better. But the reality is the system is likely going to keep doing what it's been doing for the last 30 to 40 years. However, There are many, 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 many things that you can do in terms of the attitudes and the values that you instill with your kids. Reading to them at night is an amazing thing to do because you're saying to them books are special and important. And even on, I mean, you know, a thing that my dad always did with me is that, you know, if I ever, like, dropped a book, he would, like, that was a thing for him. He would get upset because he thought books were special.
Yes.
And so, you know, even teaching them that books are special, you know, that starts to cultivate that reverence for learning. You know, but again, like, it's also just about getting them to, like, you know, create that dialogue early with parents about grades, where mm-hmm. you're not mad at them that they got a bad grade, but instead, together, you try and sit down and understand why did that happen, and let's calmly talk through what you could do differently.
Yeah, in general, it's really about, as early as possible, making sure that there's no magic in the process of learning for
yes.
your kids. And so when something goes well, it's because they worked really hard for it and they really figured it out and they dug in, not that they were just so smart in it. And when something goes poorly, it's not about trying to, you know, worry about the fact that they feel bad and make them feel better or focus them on something they're good at. No, it's about, like, okay, well, that's fine. Things go wrong for everyone, so let's figure it out. Let's look at it, and let's, you know, make sure we know it for next time. And if somebody else is really good at something, it's always about pointing out that invisible work. So even
yes.
if you as an adult are really, you know, you're a really great reader, and they're just, starting to work on reading, just being open about, you know, do you know how many years I've been practicing reading? So many. And that's why your teacher is really good at it, and
yes.
that's why your older brother is really good at it. You know, just making that invisible work, you know, putting that out in the open, taking all of the magic out of the process,
right.
so that instead of it being the way things are, it's just the way things have gone up until this point. And
well,
why did that happen? And here's what we do.
Well, until this point, this show has this time has flown, it's flew by, and I'm like, I can go on for hours and hours and hours because I'm motivated. But Alan's been biting at the chops, and he has something. He has to get this in.
Well, and actually, what it is, and I looked up also, we only have a minute, but we've got a listener question that they took the time to send the email in. I want to make sure that we get this out to you, and thank you for sending this in. It says, we began homeschooling our daughter last year because we lost all confidence in the public school system. At the end of seventh grade, she was bringing home high grades, but her reading and writing skills were actually very subpar to three of her friends who were also homeschooled. We have purchased several books, and we had hoped that would help in our effort, but unfortunately the authors spent more time talking about the problem than giving solutions and action plans. Before I purchase your book, can you tell us more about what your book provides? And again, just 30 seconds.
Well, that's, you know, there are four parts to our book, and the whole point of part three is to basically show you how you do very concrete skills. How do you read, for example? You know, that's a really great one, and I'm glad that the listener brought that up. Very often, students will just sort of, like, do what we call corn on the cob reading, where like a cartoon character eating a corn on a cob, they'll rush from line to line like a typewriter back and forth. And what they don't realize is that reading is actually much more like solving a detective problem. You read a little bit, you stop, you think about it, you know, you pick apart the clues, and then piece by piece and passing through it again and again, you pull out the meaning of it, you discover what it's really about. So that's really what part three of the book is, basically contrasting, here's the way that you currently do this skill, here's the way that actually works for a human brain, like here's the way that you should be doing it. Same thing with memorization. People try and just memorize flashcards, right? But that's boring and doesn't work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Humans remember stories. That's the things that we remember, and, like, you know, your daughter will be able to remember YouTube videos
yes.
and, you know, lyrics to songs and all of that sort of stuff, because they're stories and they're emotional and they're meaningful. And so it's, how do you take the information that's in your history textbook or in your science textbook and make it emotional, make it exciting for yourself and personal, so that you can remember it?
Paired association.
You know, go through the back half of the book, really is skill by skill, math rules, reading, writing an essay, history, you know, checking your work. We really made a point to go through section by section and hit up every subject, because you're absolutely right. We wanted to make sure that this wasn't just food for thought, but that it really turned into an action plan for students.
Hunter, Katie, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. For everybody listening, the book is called The Straight A Conspiracy, Your Secret Guide to Ending the Stress of School and Totally Ruling the World. If you want to get more information, go to www.thestraightaconspiracy.com or go to Answers, a numeral for the family. We'll have all their information there. Thank you to everybody. Be with us again next week. And until then, be good humans.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.